We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Smashing.
Insane in the membrane.
And it's, I mean, you know, this just before we were talking to you, we were just doing something else, and then the internet just disappeared. It just vanished, and you're like, this is the one thing we've got left. Yummy. Just, this wasn't in any of the films. Well, it was in some, but not. You didn't think in a million years this would actually happen. Although saying that, we're supposed to be in a lockdown. There's like a traffic jam outside my flat. Where are you? There's. Oh yeah. Yeah. In his lap, yeah. When he was talking the other day, and he's going, "Oh, they did something about the fish. Or at least they're British fish now." I'm like, "Shut up, you fucking idiot." Yeah, like this has nothing to do with fish, and everything to do with you lot trying to hang on to your money. That's what this is, isn't it? Yeah, arsehole. So we they. Of course it was. We all knew. Everybody knew. Someone said famously, they were like, you know, it's like quitting the gym, but then still expecting to be able to go in there and use the equipment. It's like, it's not gonna. Of course, it's all gonna be fucked. And now they're going. Oh yeah, now they're blaming us, the people that didn't vote for it. You're like, no, this is what you wanted. We told you it was gonna be a mess. Yeah, so it is. Yeah. The thick and the selfish. Yeah. No. To where we're at. I know. We had a brief chat yesterday. There'd have to be something wrong with you not to have your mental health be troubled at this time. You know, you'd have to be a robot, I think.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
I tell you what, the technology will end up, it just sends you over the edge, won't it? It just,
it's too much.
I don't remember Captain Kirk ever screaming into, you know, Stardate log, blah, blah. And they go, oh, sorry,
my Bluetooth headphones!
Spot, sort this out.
Yeah. Fucking, I'd be constantly asking for a Vulcan death grip, I would.
Just finish me off, mate. Just put me to sleep for half an hour.
Spock. These headphones are not working. Grab the shoulder, son. Grab the shoulder.
Put me out for 20 minutes.
Job done.
And it's, I mean, you know, this just before we were talking to you, we were just doing something else, and then the internet just disappeared. It just vanished. And you're like, this is the one thing we've got left.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's 2021. We don't have flying cars like the Jetsons promised, but we have got a virus and a government that can't work out what to do.
Yummy.
It's absolutely bonkers.
This wasn't in any of the films. Well, it was in some, but not.
Yeah.
You didn't think in a million years this would actually happen. Although saying that, we're supposed to be in a lockdown. There's like a traffic jam outside my flat.
It's not fishermen, is it? Some fishermen with trawlers, with lorries full of fish ready to dump on Boris Johnson's doorstep. How didn't that happen the other day?
Yeah.
How didn't all of those fishing trucks that were in London dump all of those fish in Jacob Rees-Mogg's front room?
In his lap, yeah.
Blows my mind.
Well, he was talking the other day, and he's going, it's something about the fish, or at least they're British fish now. I'm like, shut up, you.
Yeah, what a tit.
Yeah, like, this has nothing to do with fish and everything to do with you lot trying to hang on to your money.
This 100%.
Isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Arsehole.
Just doing it for their friends. And it's just mad. It's just how can a stupid idiot like myself, right? Just a stupid South Wales Valley boy. How did I know Brexit was going to go so wrong? But yet people who own massive businesses involved in shipping things to the EU thought everything would be fine. How?
I know.
It blows my mind. I don't own a fishing company, but I knew that it was going to be a disaster.
Of course it was. We all knew. Everybody knew. It was like there was someone said famously, they were like, you know, it's like quitting the gym, but then still expecting to be able to go in there and use the equipment.
Yeah, 100%.
It's not going to, of course, it is all going to be fucked. And now they're going, oh, yeah, now they're blaming us, the people that didn't vote for it. Like, no, this is what you wanted. We told you it was going to be a mess.
But that's the thing, see, we've been shouting what they call Project Fear all this time.
Yeah.
And now it turns out it's Project Here. And it's happening. You mad fools.
Yeah,
it's just absolutely, absolutely bonkers. Like, to me, like in the Bible, and I'm not religious, it does say that the earth, the meek will inherit the earth.
Yeah.
But it really seems like the really thick have inherited the earth.
the thick and the selfish.
Yeah, to get to where we are now, to be led down the garden path.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. It's just not helping my mental health, which brings us lovely to
to where
we
are
now.
I know.
Yes.
I know. We had a brief chat yesterday. You'd have to be, there'd have to be something wrong with you not to have your mental health be troubled at this time, you know?
Yes.
You'd have to be a robot, I think.
Or just unaware of it, which seems to be a running theme with, especially with Brexiteers as well, I found, is like, they're so blind to it. And like, I've got friends from my town who voted for it, just off the lies they saw in the newspapers or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when I'm saying like, well, you know, what's going to happen now when there's, you know, struggles at the border and stuff? And he's like, oh, it's all right. They'll work it out. And I'm just like, who's they? The useless Tories who have damaged everything for 10 years. Like, what are you talking about? And it's just, yeah, they're just blind to it. And because it doesn't directly affect their thing, they're not bothered. Which is exactly the same with the virus, really. Like, loads of my friends I noticed were, you know, all for lockdowns and all, and, you know, wearing masks and believing in the virus because it actually exists. And then as soon as it infected their thing, they were like, oh, no, this isn't fair. And it's like, no, guess what? It's the same for everyone. It doesn't matter. And then, I got friends who were like bouncers who were like, I can't believe they shut the pubs. And I'm like, well, the public houses that are meant for socialising. Yeah, nobody should be socialising because it's a killer virus.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, well, I'm losing money. I was like, do you know what I mean? Like, I was meant to DJ last year at the official after show parties for the My Chemical Romance shows that were meant to be happening in Mintle Keynes, right? I blagged that somehow, right? And it was worth a fortune. I was going to get paid a fortune. And my friend's like, oh, I can't believe it now. I've lost my extra income from not being able to work. I was like, I've lost all my income from this thing. But selfishly, unselfishly, I'm not complaining and trying to get gigs happening so we can super spread. It's just... Yeah.
Exactly.
It's so disheartening as well. It's just...
Of course it is. And you're like, come on, if we just... I've been doing I've got a day job. And listeners to the podcast will know I've mentioned this before. And I'm working with some really... They're good lads. And one of them said the other day, he goes, if everyone just stopped fucking around, we could have a summer. We could get out there again. But like you say, because it doesn't affect people directly, they don't give a fuck. Or they keep going, it's a conspiracy. No, it's not.
I just don't know how people are seeing photos of New Zealand and Australia and stuff doing gigs and aren't like, well, let's do that. Why? Let's copy exactly what they've done right now so we can get to that as soon as possible.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense to me why people are, I don't know, and just letting the government off and like feeling sorry for Boris. He wanted the job. He got his dream job. And guess what? It just happened to be the virus. And the majority of it is on him. He should have shut down over a year ago, but he didn't. Yeah. And here we are.
Exactly. Oh, man. I know. It's so frustrating. And we sit here. You feel helpless, don't you? Like you say, like we've all lost our careers and well, but we are the lucky ones. We haven't lost lives. We've been very lucky.
Yeah.
But you just sit here frustrated going, what can we do? We're doing everything we can, you know, but the people in charge aren't, oh man, I don't know. It's like being led by fucking clowns, isn't it?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
I think it's probably like 90% the Conservatives' fault and then 10% maybe your fault, because I've listened to your chat with Richard Herring. And you mentioned that every time you do something good, something awful happens. So
it's true. I take responsibility for my part in this downfall.
But also, I think that might be a mixture then of both of us, because I used to be in a band called The Blackout, which did surprisingly well for six idiots from South Wales who wrote mediocre best rock music. We had a saying that we literally, in the end, our last ever gig, an artist did paintings, six separate paintings for each member of the band with The Blackout. If it can go wrong, it will go wrong.
Yeah.
So in the end of, towards the middle of 2019, we were asked by a major promoter in the UK, did the Blackout fancy doing like a reunion tour? And I think it might be because we considered it for a couple of seconds.
Right.
That the virus then, Mother Nature then created the virus to battle us getting back together and possibly being happy again. Yeah. So I think it's a mixture between me and you, really. So I'm sorry for my, I'm very sorry for my part.
I'm sorry too, everybody listening. Sean and I are very sorry.
Yeah, this has happened. I didn't know it was going to happen, so
no,
I would have warned everybody, but I didn't know. So I am very sorry.
Do you know what? Mentioning your band, people don't talk about this enough. There's so many great bands that have come from Wales, and
yes,
I think there's such a great scene. Such a great scene. Where did you grow up?
I grew up and I currently live in 2008's third roughest town in Britain, Merthyr Tydfil.
Well, I know Merthyr Tydfil.
Do you? What for?
Yes.
Why? Crime. Have you been buying drugs?
Of course.
Oh, well, that explains it all then.
Yeah, cool. This is why already I could feel we have a connection. You've done some things. I understand. there is a massive scene. There is a massive scene.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I was... when the Blackout started, I think we started in like 2003. Before we started, there was... We were constantly looking at American bands. Like, we loved American bands. I will unashamedly admit that I have always and will always love Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
Who literally took me from... I was kind of into indie prior to finding Limp Bizkit. So I was into like Stereophonics from 15 miles away from where I live.
Yes.
So, you know, we saw them and we were like, oh my God, they've managed to get out of their crap town. This is unbelievable. So like I got into them and they were the first gig I ever went to. And then I found Limp Bizkit and a song called Hot Dog where he says the word fuck 48 times. and I thought, swearing and shouting, oh my good Lord, that's two things I can do brilliantly. And then from then on, yeah, I just completely changed the avenue of music I kind of liked. And I went from indie rock to that shouting, screamy goth music I was previously scared of.
Yeah.
And then ultimately I saw Lost Prophets play. And that completely changed my life. And as much as, you know, that's kind of, the name shouldn't be a buzzword. The name Lost Prophet shouldn't be a buzzword.
No.
It's one of those boys committed the worst, terrible crimes of all time and deserves to be hung for it. Whereas the other five, you have never met a nicer bunch of people. They were my inspiration growing up. They were my heroes for about 3 or 4 years before I even met them. And they showed me that I could get out of my town and potentially make something of myself. And I'd never even thought of that prior to seeing them.
No.
So, they literally inspired an incredible scene that came out of that. So you had Lost Prophets, Funeral for a Friend, Kids in Glass Houses. There was a band called Said Mike, who were cool. The Blackout, that some people liked. Bullet for My Valentine.
Amazing.
And it just grew, and it just grew and grew and grew. And at one point, there was like five or six of those bands were all practicing at the same time in the same rehearsal space. And it was like possibly three of the biggest bands in the UK at the time, with like Bullet, Lost Prophets, and Funeral for a Friend all being there. And we were all just standing there and just sitting about, and like, people would kill just to be around this lot. And here I am, lucky enough that being a gobshite from Merthyr has got me into this position.
Well, those bands just blew up. Lost Prophets were everywhere, you know, Bullet for My Valentine. All these bands it just took over the world, and it was fantastic. Lost Prophets was one of the last bands I ever moshed to. We were at Glastonbury. I remember getting up early and going, right, we're going to go, I've got to go and see this band. and going down the front and just had such a good time. And my lads, we had their first album was always on in the car. The guys I work with now at the t-shirt place, we have this conversation once a week at least. The sadness that we feel when it comes to that band in particular.
Yeah, well,
there was such a great band, and we often talk about, we don't talk about Ian so much because like we're all in agreement, obviously.
Yeah, fuck him.
But fuck that evil sack of shit. We talk 100%. About the other lads. We talk about the lads and the effect it must have had on them and you, friends that of course didn't know what the fuck was going on. Yeah, he was probably a bit weird and you kind of go, is this a bit weird? But no, he was. You didn't know this fucking scale of it.
No. Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, so I went from like hero worship to actually like befriend, like becoming like best friends with the six of them. And yeah, he just, over time, we kind of realized he'd started to get into drugs.
Yeah.
Like he went from being straight edge to next minute he just seemed agitated all the time and we were all like, oh, this seems corky. And then he was hanging out with girls who were, we knew were, you know, into partying or whatever. And then I think towards the end and before he got arrested, he was very much into crystal meth and stuff as well.
Wow.
But okay. The other five of the band, I haven't mentioned it, but I do a podcast called Sapling Podcast with Sean Smith,
yes.
Which talks about kind of the behind the scenes look at band life and stuff like that, really. Mm. And episode 53, we had Stuart Richardson, the bassist of Lost Prophets on.
That's right.
And he, it was the first time any of them have ever spoken about it, which I found mad as well. Mm. And yeah,
I suppose they always distanced themselves, didn't they? They were just...
Well, yeah, this is it. They kind of, well, it was a mixture of distancing and they didn't seem like they were victims of this crime, which
yes,
I believe they are. I 100% believe they are.
Absolutely.
They lost everything because of him. They were about to sign a deal for a lot of money for an old album.
Yeah.
And yeah, he literally, he swiped everything from under him. Like, you know, they can't, like Stu mentions on the podcast, like he can't tell people, he can't brag about the things he's done. Like they've headlined Download, they sold out arena tours.
They were massive,
Yeah, they were absolutely massive. Number one album. And that's all been taken, like, some of them have just smashed their gold discs and stuff as well.
Oh, wow.
And it's insane. But Stu mentioned a story on my podcast about Ian missed a show on Warped Tour, right? Mm. So they were doing Warped Tour in the States, and that's like a tour that lasts all summer, and you play, like, car parks or stadiums. And Ian missed a show. When he turned up, Stu from the band battered him with a can of Monster.
Oh, really?
He literally, yeah. And that was for missing a show. This is for missing a show, right?
Yeah.
Bear in mind, Stu and all the other five people in Lost Prophets at the time are parents as well, right? So with everything that Ian did, like, I think, because people think, I've seen people online saying they must have known. And I was how do you know? How do you, like, Like, as soon as that fucking hotel door is closed, who knows what's going on behind there? Nobody has an idea.
No, nobody
suspected anything like that from him. And, yeah, I think if any of Lost Prophets did for a split second, he would have been beheaded in whatever place he was.
Of course, absolutely.
Because it just took everything and it hurt everybody. Like, you know, all their families were now get looked at differently.
They were in on it.
We mentioned in the first episode of the podcast I do that I spoke to like editors of like the biggest rock magazines in the UK, and I asked genuinely, do you think it affected like us and Kids in Glass Houses and Funeral for a Friend? And they said yes. They said
fuck.
Some people will see you being tarnished because you're friends with them. I'm friends with him, or was friends with him, even though my friendship with him probably stopped 2 years prior to him being arrested.
Yeah.
Because he'd just gone weird. He'd gone very, like, I'm guessing it was drugs, but
yeah,
he started getting paranoid about stuff. And I talked to a girl he knew, and then that was it, I think. And then he kind of stopped talking to me. But luckily for me, like, I guess.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, we were tarnished with our brush as long, you know, as well as Kids in Glass Houses, Funeral for a Friend, well, anyone from South Wales, because we were all in that kind of, like, a clique.
Yeah.
I think the only ones who got scot-free, which is good for them, is Bullet for My Valentine, because they kind of, they were kind of the anti-Lost Prophets in the scene.
Mm.
They when they came out, I remember the singer from Bullet for My Valentine, his first interview in Kerrang! Magazine, he said, why would Fern Cotton have rump steak when she can have fillet? Because at the time, Fern Cotton was seeing Ian.
Yeah.
And the singer Matt from Bullet, I guess, wouldn't have minded Fern Cotton as his girlfriend.
Yeah, right.
So, so they kind of came out and, yeah, they always kind of distanced themselves from him, which is absolutely brilliant for them now.
Mm.
But, yeah, everybody else was tainted with it. And I think we all...
We were all
brought down by it.
And how do you recover from that? What do you do? Like you say, it's because you weren't involved. It wasn't you. It was this fucking horrible prick was off doing the worst stuff imaginable. It was unimaginable. It's never in a million years that.
Well, this is the thing. When it came out, when the news, December 12th, 2012 was when the news broke. I woke up in this very room, and there was a text off the bassist from my band saying, Ian's in the news, right? Mm. And my first thought was, overdose.
Yeah.
Right? He's dead. So, Reese said, Ian's in the news. And I said, oh, yeah. And he said, he's all right, but also, it's awful. And I was like, what is this? So then I read the article, and it said, like, for sexual intercourse with like a 1-year-old or something like that, it said.
Oh, yeah.
And instantly in my mind was like, whoa, the newspapers have got that super wrong. Surely they mean like I thought maybe a 15-year-old, he'd slept with a 15-year-old who told him she was older or something like that. And in the newspapers, they'd made a grammatical error by not writing 1-5. So in my mind, I went, what? They mean 15, like this is an error. And then for it to come out, like, it just blew everybody's, like, what the fuck are you?
Yeah.
To this day, it is shocking, and it's just mind blowing. I cannot believe it. I cannot believe the man I knew or thought I knew would go on to do such an insane crime.
Yeah.
It's fucking nuts.
I mean, we were affected as fans, you know, that crime was, I mean, it's the worst thing I think I've ever heard of. And we were affected as fans. So God knows what you lot must have felt like being mates with him. I mean, although you weren't at the time, but that was someone you had been close with at some point. And
well, yeah, he'd been my hero. He'd literally I'd seen him as the epitome of what I could do as a Welsh frontman, as somebody in a Welsh band. I was like, Jesus, what? Yeah. We have the ability to headline Download. What, we can do these tours and we take like insane, like they took one tour they did was Lost Prophets, Take It Back Sunday and My Chemical Romance opened from. And now you look at that and that's a stadium tour. It's just, I saw him as like the epitome of what was possible. And then you find out he's done what he's done. It's just insane. And it's just...
And do you go... Like, yeah, go on.
I just wanted... Like, my first thought was, I want to check in on his mother. Because I knew his mother had just had like a liver or kidney transplant or something not long before he got arrested. And then when I spoke to any of the Lost Prophets boys and I asked how their families were doing and, you know, had anybody been in touch with Ian's mother... Everybody had just distanced themselves because nobody knew what to do, and we all thought it was the best thing to do. So, Yeah, it's just the craziest situation.
What did his mum say? I mean, she must have been...
Well, I don't know. Well, this is the thing. Nobody's...
I don't think
nobody has... Because I know one of the guitarist's mothers lived opposite his mother. Mm. But I don't know if they've spoken since, and I haven't heard anything. But, it was just awful.
But that's the thing with these... It affects so many people, doesn't it? You never, like I've said, as a fan, we talk about this. I think this conversation comes up at least once a week with different people where we just go, fuck.
Yeah.
And that's on our level. So fuck knows what you must deal with on a daily basis. It
I'm not, this is the thing, I'm not like a poster talking about it to anyone, because I think my mission now is, right, I wouldn't have anything I've got right now if it wasn't for Lost Prophets, right?
Mm.
Like, I wouldn't have made the leap to rock, metal rock stuff. I wouldn't be doing this now. I wouldn't have the podcast I've got now, because the podcast is based on stories I got to live through because of the Blackout and Lost Prophets or whatever. So, yeah, I've got everything because of them. And it's kind of now my mission I've taken on. To, if I hear anybody talk shit about them, I'm instantly into fucking sticking up for the boys and trying to exonerate them, because absolutely. I think that's my mission. Like, I would have nothing if it wasn't for them. So, that podcast with Stu is the proudest one I've done. This is the one I'm most proud of, because we got to get their story out there.
Yeah,
and
people
literally got in touch with us after it, saying thank you so much for this, because some of them doubted that the boys did know, and doubted the boys, and they needed that. They needed the closure from the boys, and we had people saying thank you so much, like even just for the graphic that we did for the show, because he said Stu Richardson, Thursday, because he's in a band called Thursday, Devotion / Lost Prophets. And just us putting Lost Prophets on the graphic, we were getting people messaging us and mailing us saying, thank you so much for that. I'm glad somebody's trying to, make it, clean the name, man. Clean the name. Yeah. Like, it's not a dirty word. And it's genuinely the thing I'm most proud of. There's some brilliant stories on there. And I think for anybody who thinks for a second, when they hear the name Lost Prophets and they're sickened, they want to listen to that to hear what everybody else in the band went through.
Absolutely.
They were fucking robbed. They were fucking mugged. Yeah. It's fucking awful. It's awful. And I know people are like, oh, pity band didn't get him. But it's like, that's their life. It's their legacy. Like, you can't even audition for a new band, because people are going to go, oh, what band do you used to be in? And then you tell them, and they automatically think negatively of it. And that's it's bonkers to me. It's absolutely bonkers.
Fucking bollocks, that is. Absolutely bollocks.
So many people in the alternative scene owe a career to Lost Prophets. Yeah. Bring Me the Horizon, for example.
Great band.
Yeah, fantastic band. I have heard Ollie Sykes several times mention his favourite band growing up was Lost Prophets. So they're one of the biggest bands in UK metal now.
Yeah.
So without Lost Prophets, I can't imagine what the scene would look like.
No, they did. They changed everything.
Well, yeah, fashion. They changed fashion as well. When they came out, they were the band wearing tight, like, second-hand vintage T-shirts and big baggy jeans, and nobody had seen that at the time.
No.
Like, they were dressing like new metal. They were dressing like Limp Bizkit, I guess.
Go on.
I remember Topshop then came along and started doing fashion very much like the style of Lost Prophets. So it was like, next minute they had vintage tees for sale and stuff in Topshop and big baggy jeans. And I was like, not only have they done it musically and made everybody in the valleys realize, oh, we can do Americanized rock.
Yeah.
And we don't have to stick to indie and doing sad songs about mining villages. We can just fucking write songs about whatever we want and have a good time. And they were such a brilliant, brilliant inspiration across everything.
Yeah.
They looked amazing. They sounded awesome. And they put on one of the best live shows you've ever seen in your life.
It was all those bands, everything, that amalgamation of rock and hip hop was such a, it was so inspirational. I remember seeing one of them had like, he had purple trousers on, like they were, but it was like skate sort of type vibe, like Vans type of thing. And I was like, I want a pair of those. I need to get a pair of them. I'd never thought about purple trousers until then.
Nope.
But I saw that and I'm like, fuck yeah, that's what I'm after. And that's how you know when a scene is so powerful, when, like you say, fashion changes, you know? Like when Oasis blew up and everyone started dressing like them, and that's how you know that it's when you're changing, you're the zeitgeist, you're it.
Yeah.
It must be phenomenal. Well, I remember,
I remember when I was just a fan of Lost Prophets before I was even on their radar. I remember taking photos of them into hairdressers.
Yeah.
And going, give me this, I need this. And they're looking at it going, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, hey, it's what I like. So chuck it on the noggin. They literally changed everything for so many people. And there's so many bands today that I don't even know if they realize how important Lost Prophets are in them existing.
Yeah, yeah.
So many bands.
It's just like you say, which is why it's important to talk about the legacy.
Yeah.
And the lads, because they are a talented band, regardless of that evil sack of shit. The lads themselves, having seen them up front and personal, phenomenal musicians. Incredible. Oh, unbelievable.
And I think that's why they're lucky. I guess... That's why I'm glad that some of them haven't stopped making music. So Stu and Lee from Lost Prophets, he's the guitarist and a bassist. They're now in a band called No Devotion with Jeff Rickley, who fronts Thursday. And that's awesome. Mike from Lost Prophets also used to be in that band, but I think he stepped down now. And it's just amazing that those boys have kept making music, because just after the chat with Stu, you could see how heartbroken they were. And I know when my band ended, the blackout ended in March 28th, 2015, right?
Mm.
My band ended just because the boys had got married and had kids or whatever. And, things were kind of slowing down with the band as their families were kicking off. So the boys wanted to go and do family stuff and that stuff. And I know how devastated I was for my band ending for the next 3 or 4 years. Like, I literally did nothing. I just thought, oh, I'm done now. I just thought, I was promised, when I was in the band, I kind of, just before the end of the band, I'd made inroads with some people. I talked to a radio presenter and told her how I wanted to get into radio. And she was like, oh, I'll help you out. So
brilliant.
Wait now. Remember earlier when I said about the paintings we had done?
Oh, yeah.
It's coming round full circle. So when the end of the band came, I wasn't that worried because I knew, this woman had promised me this thing. And because she would phone me up whenever she wanted something from the blackout, she'd phone me up and we'd do it. We'd just go down there and record for her whatever she wanted. So when the time came, we split up, and I probably sent 5 messages in the first 6 months, asking, is there any chance I could take up her offer of coming on and learning the reins? And I didn't hear back from her until March of last year, when we had the really bad floods in South Wales, and she realised I was valuable again because of the podcast and my new band.
Okay.
So seeing that and seeing the drop-off and seeing how many people the blackout helped or made money for, there's some people we made quite a bit of money for, who would always promise they'd have our backs, and as soon as the band ended, they were nowhere to be seen couldn't get in contact with them, or they just didn't reply. And... yeah, it was such a crazy drop-off for me. So what it must have been like for the Lost Prophets boys, literally one day you're in a band and you're just about to get a massive, massive check again for an old album. And then, whoop, the carpet's gone and now you're all branded with this fucking scumbag.
Oh, must have been... I can't even imagine what that must have felt like.
I'll be honest, I've struggled since my band ended. So what it must have been like for them is insane. I don't know how they got through it.
Because that's what we all dream of when we're growing up. I know I did. I really wanted to be in a band. But I wasn't around musicians. Nobody really said, oh yeah, you can do that. And I didn't really think, it never really went anywhere, but it was a dream. But you got to do that. Wow, man.
It's like, well, I say it on the podcast every week. Like, it's the fact that I've been allowed near a lot of the people I've been near.
Yeah.
That in itself is mind blowing. The fact that I'm friends with some of my heroes, my musical heroes. I got numbers in my phone. It's insane. And when you break it down to something like, I am just a fella from Merthyr Tydfil, right? Just an idiot from Merthyr Tydfil. And in my phone, I've got some of the most ridiculous people you've ever come across.
Crazy.
And it's just nuts to me. To this day, it blows my mind that I've got... One of the first albums I ever bought, right, was Guns N' Roses' Use Your Illusion 2, right?
Right, yeah.
I know it's not the best of the Use Your Illusions, but I was young and I saw a parental advisory sticker and I was like...
That was it.
Yeah, I want to read the word fuck. Because it was back when you couldn't read the word fuck anyway.
Yeah.
It's true. There was no internet, there was no phones, you couldn't even write it down yourself. So I picked up Use Your Illusion 2. Cut 20 years later, I'm sat in a minivan in Australia with my best friend Scott from Merthyr, and next minute Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses comes in, sits between us, and he starts talking to us, and he says, oh, so what part of South Wales are you from? And we were like, 30 miles north of Cardiff. And he went, what part of South Wales are you from? And I was like, you won't have heard of it. I said, Merthyr Tydfil. Oh, he said, I know Merthyr Tydfil. I've read a book called M for Merthyr, or Dial M for Merthyr. And I was like, what the fuck? That's about my friend's band. I was like, you fucking Duff McKagan. And then, so basically, we were on our way to go and watch Chris Jericho and Scott Ian from Anthrax. Chris Jericho was former WWE wrestler and frontman of a band called Fozzy. And they were doing spoken word. So our old tour manager was friends with Duff, so invited Duff along, so he came with us. So we literally had the best seats in the house. They moved us up to the front. They literally moved civilians out of the way. I felt like a king. I felt like Axl Rose for 5 minutes. And we sat there. It was me, my friend Scott, just two lads from Merthyr, Duff McKagan. And then Duff was like, let's go backstage. I was like, what the fuck? We went backstage. Me and Scott were the least famous people in the room. It was me, Scott, Duff McKagan, Scott Ian from Anthrax, Chris Jericho from WWE fame, and Kerry King from Slayer.
Fuck.
And I was like, we do not belong in you. We do not belong in you, Scott. If anybody like from big management was here now, they'd be like, these two have got to go. It's not safe for them to be around you guys. But there's been so many times I've found myself in that predicament where I'm, again, as everybody listening to this will know, just a dickhead from South Wales. And I've just...
You lived the dream. I
have lived the dream. Lived the dream. And it's fucking insane. What a fantastic dream it's been.
I have conversations with this about this sort of thing with other comedians, and I talk about the people I've worked with, and then we have, like again, I'm going, yeah, but you know, I'm just this fucking idiot from Kent. How did I get to be in a room with these people? And you go, because you worked at it, because you grafted, and you went after it, and that's why you got the things you got, because you put the work in, and you far from not being, you shouldn't be in that room. You should absolutely have been in that room. You should absolutely have been having these conversations, because you're part of that thing. And what I found as well, that these big stars, they still have these days where they go, fuck, you know. Like Liam Gallagher the other day, ages ago, he just said sometimes he just gets up and he's like, oh, fuck. And he looks in the mirror and he goes, you're all right, you fucking Liam Gallagher. And then he gets on with his day.
but you know.
I wouldn't mind that for myself, yeah. I wish I could look in the mirror and see Liam Gallagher and then
you
go,
look cool as fuck, man.
Yeah, but then I was thinking, but then it comes with his, oh, I am Liam Gallagher, I'm fucking minted.
So it comes out of money, yeah.
Yeah, I'll never need to work again. Oh, what a wonderwall. Fucking brilliant, like.
I got, I think my mental health would be vastly improved if I didn't have to worry about
paying
the bills.
You know, people say, moneyness can't buy you happy. Money can't buy you happiness, but I'd like to give it a go.
It can buy you a little bit.
Yeah, give me a couple of million. Let me have a bash, for fuck's sake. I'll tell you if it does. I'm guessing it does, because I'd be well better off.
So did you get stuck in, like, proper rock star shenanigans? That's what we want. We want our rock stars to be... We want them to be doing the things we can't do.
I had a bash, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Depends what you're talking about, I guess. I just realised I've just incriminated myself.
We just look. We know our rock stars. We're not. When I say that, when I go, we want our rock stars to be getting out there and taking risks and doing the things that we can't do. And I don't mean we're not talking about what we talked about earlier. I'm talking about getting on it. You're getting on it. And
I had a good bash of that.
Well,
basically, the Blackout had an album called Hope, which we crowdfunded via Pledge Music. We were one of the first acts to ever use like Pledge and Kickstarter to fund a record. Charlie Simpson was the first before us with Pledge.
Oh, right.
He did a solo album. And then they got in touch with us and asked, would we like to do it? So at first we thought it was kind of like begging your fans for money. So we were like, oh, we don't really want to be seen as this. And then we had to explain to us that anything that you sell, it doesn't have to be bought. If people don't want to buy it, they don't have to buy it. So whatever. So we did this album where it was called Hope, and it was basically all in the hope that we'd get to carry on being a band, I guess.
Brilliant.
Which was kind of like a sad, kind of melancholic, but also look into the future type album. And then after that, we did 2 years of that album cycle, and it was during that time I had started partying, shall we say.
Yep.
And I'd finally found drink, because I did 10 years of being straight edge. I was drinking drug-free for 10 years.
Okay.
18 to 28, I believe.
Yeah, right. And that was just you didn't fancy it, didn't want to do it, not asked.
No, I did it once. I got drunk once when I was 15. I drank 3 litres of White Lightning outside somebody's house. We were going to a house party.
Yeah.
And I'd never touched alcohol before, and I drank 3 litres of White Lightning.
Fuck.
Stood up, everything went boo, and went upside down. And then you wouldn't believe the things I tried at the house party. I smashed a pint glass over my head.
Christ.
The thing is, right, I was a very happy child. Like, I was a very happy person at this time. So I don't know where all this came from. I tried to stab myself with a bread knife, apparently. That's
what?
Mad. Yeah, it didn't work, so I wasn't trying hard enough. Smashed a pint glass over my head, and I stupidly, drunkenly fell over, and I thought I was engaged in a sexual act with somebody. While they were fully clothed, closed.
Right.
So yeah, I was just hammered, and it was enough to put me off drinking. For 13 plus years after that, then I guess. But yeah, when it came to 18, but that was again, that was like lost profits and stuff. They were all straight edge at the time, and I was like, this is cool. Well, I don't need to drink or take drugs like everybody else in Merthyr Tydfil, which is known for alcoholism and drug use.
Is it really?
That's why you got 2008's third roughest town in Britain. It's based on drug use, alcoholism, income. What else? Just how rough it is, how many council estates there are. We got Europe's biggest council estate, I believe. Not that it's something to brag about, but...
Wow.
And as you can tell, I will not be running for mayor of Merthyr anytime soon.
I've gigged a few times in when I started comedy. It was a lot of it was around sort of South Wales, and so you had Blingadu, Blackwood, and those places. So I'm aware of what you're talking about.
Where in Blackwood did you play?
The Miners Institute.
That's the first place I ever saw Lost Prophets.
Really.
downstairs in Blackwood Miners in that small room.
Fuck.
400 to 500 people. I literally, before that, the only other gig I'd ever been to was Stereophonics in Morpher Stadium. So we went from loads of indie, bucket hat wearing, corduroy lads to all of a sudden I was seeing a mosh pit for the first time where people were swinging their arms into each other and jumping on each other. And there was members of the band, like Jamie from the band was like running across the crowd's heads. And I was just there going, what is this? This looks hell. Like hell. And I love it. I love it. And it just, it literally changed my life, that gig in that venue. So,
and did you find, because we had Nicky Wire's brother on, Patrick, and we were talking to, I was talking to him about what it must have been like for the lads growing, because, you know, growing up in Blackwood, but being how they were. And was that the same with you? With you, like the alternative scene, was it sort of, did you feel, did you stick out, or did you say, no, fuck it, I don't care, this is, did you have your tribe? Because I know where I grew up, if you'd have dressed it a little bit differently, we'd have got your head kicked in. It was that kind
definitely.
Of...
Yeah, it was... Yeah, but do you remember the day? Because I was talking about this with my younger girlfriend the other day, and she has no clue about this. I remember back in the day, if you saw somebody with a rock-based hoodie on, any band, you'd give them a nod in the street to be like, I like rock as well. It didn't even matter if you hated the band they had on. You would still be like, ooh, System of a Down hoodie. Nice, bro, nice. Whereas now, you just automatically don't speak to anybody else. But yeah, what I found out is, we're talking about, did we stick out or... like 60 years ago, my grandfather managed the Castle Cinema in Merthyr Tydfil, in the centre of town. And it's only lately that I found out that they put on gigs there back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. They had Led Zeppelin play there. They had Pink Floyd play there. And then, so a guy got in touch with me about doing a BBC documentary about it, because nearly exactly 50 years later, I started promoting and started putting gigs on in South Wales to get people to come to Merthyr to gig, because we didn't have any international we didn't have any national bands come in at the time. It was just local bands would play every week. So me and my friend were like, right then, we need to get some bands from that England. so we ended up putting shows on, and like the first ever shows that were in Merthyr of the new rock scene we put on. And then then the BBC researcher found out that it was like exactly 50 years before when my grandfather started putting massive gigs on in South. Well, they were massive at the time because Pink Floyd weren't massive yet, but he literally did the same thing as me 50 years later.
Fuck.
Or 50 years earlier. And that kind of blew my mind, because I'm not really one for, thinking things are linked, or, you know, it'll happen. History repeats itself even. It does. So I'm wrong.
It's mad. Were you aware of what your grandfather had done before that?
No, I knew he'd been the manager of the cinema, but then I just thought it was films. So it was until the guy doing the documentary was like, oh no, you would have been involved. Like, he was there from 1955 to like 1980 something.
Wow.
So they were like, he definitely would have been involved with all of, like, the manager of the cinema. It would have had to have gone through him.
Fuck.
And so like he dealt with all these bands. And the thing is, like, I remember him when I was younger, and I don't ever remember him being into music or anything like that either. So maybe he wasn't, but he just so happened to put on what went on to be some of the greatest bands of all time in Merthyr Tydfil. Like.
Yeah, that is incredible. It must be something in you. You must have something in your DNA.
Make something interesting happen in Merthyr. That's what it is.
That's what it is. And what I love that. That what you've just told me is beautiful. I love shit like that. I remember my dad telling me, my dad got me into music. I've mentioned this loads before, but he tells me stories about seeing like John Lee Hooker in the Civic Centre in the small town we grew up in.
Yeah.
Seeing the Who or the Kinks in a bingo hall. in Bromley or wherever, and you're like, fuck. You know, seeing the small faces at Chislehurst Caves. It's
mad,
it blows my mind. I love that shit.
Yeah.
And so when people tell me, like, with everything that's going on now, they go, oh, everything's fucked. And you go, it'll find a way. Someone somewhere will find a darkened room somewhere with a few plugs, and they'll go, right, we're doing a gig in here.
Yeah.
And it will come back. It just takes people like yourself that with a bit more vision than the rest of us to go, right, we're going to do it over there, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if it was vision. I wouldn't say it was vision. I think it was probably naivety at the time. It was just like, oh, we're bugging it. The first gig I ever put on was Four Foot Fingers. We were a ska band.
Brilliant.
Who came from England. Like, a band coming from England at the time was big news in Merthyr Tydfil.
Really?
Yeah, it was almost as if aliens had landed. Well, you were talking about like rooms you've been in where you felt like you shouldn't have been allowed. Like, who's that been with? Who have you gigged with that has blown your mind?
I'm trying to think now. Now I've said it, I'm trying to think. It's just. I can't think off the top of my head who it was. But there's people like
I love Richard Erin. So when you. When I saw the other day, when you asked me to do this, I was like, he must have got the wrong Sean Smith. This is fucking insane. And then I had to look at your list and I was like, oh my God, it's loads of comedians I love as well.
But that's, those people I've worked with over time. I've been doing comedy I started in 2004, 16 years.
Yeah.
And these people I came up with. So I was talking to somebody the other day and went, you had Richard Herring on your podcast. I'm like, yeah, it was just Rich. Like, I know him sort of. They go, no, this is massive. I go, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Him and Stu literally formed my my comedic taste, I guess. Because I've always wanted to have a bash. I've always wanted to try stand-up. I know probably everybody says it's Stu, and I'm so sorry.
I think you'd be great.
But I just, it's something about me that just won't write things down. Like, I'll come up with something. And I'll be like, right, oh, this will be good to remember. And then I get involved in a Jamaican cigarette and I forget everything I've previously done in my life. So, back to Rich for a sec. I remember being probably 12, 13, 14 and seeing This Morning with Richard Not Judy on BBC Two on a Sunday. And I distinctly remember seeing they did a sketch during it where Stu pretends to be Jesus and then they go through like Bible studies bits and like show how it's hypocritical, I guess. Like, there's a bit in it where Judas comes along and he kisses Jesus, obviously, and then Jesus gets led away. So Jesus goes, but you know, you've kissed me and you're a traitor. And then Judas goes, yeah, but if I don't stab you in the back, you don't get killed for our sins. So technically, Judas could be the saviour of mankind. Oh, and it was just things like that in Richard Erin and Stuart Lee that made me go, oh yeah, religion's bollocks. That's mad. This doesn't make sense at all. And then since then, like, I've went to a Leicester Square Theatre, Rehalistapa, he calls them. I've been to a couple of them. When I was recording an album called Start the Party. I'm all over the place. But that's where I started partying. And ultimately, I wrote an album about me partying. And we have a song called Higher and Higher. And the fans then, I think, because... myself, I got into my partying phase. I was thinking, oh, all the fans have come in with me on this. They're all the same. So we wrote an album called Start the Party and we shot videos in Ibiza where we were out with Matthew Pritchard from Dirty Sanchez doing mad shit on the boat. And I was very partying while forgetting my audience was a bunch of goths who just wanted me to be miserable.
Introspective. And
And ultimately they won. So
all right, start the party. Fine.
Start the party failed And then I went back to being miserable. So you got what you wanted, goths.
Yeah, well done, goths. Bloody and now you sleep upside down in a darkened wardrobe. And just...
Yeah, like Del Preston from Wayne's World 2.
Yeah.
I cannot be harmed by conventional weapons because I sleep upside down now.
I tell you what, actually, there was a moment for me. I was in the, I think it was when I got to perform at the Comedy Store. That was when I started doing, because that was like, that was everything for me. It was like, when I when I reached that, that's when I know I've achieved. And I remember being in the green room and Alexis Sale was in one corner chatting and there was some other people in the other corner. And I'm just sitting there. That was when I went, oh my God, what am I doing? This is fucking mad. And there was there was one night there, I went out and I was emceeing and I went out, I did my bit and I came back in the green room and Simon, there's two Simons, and Big Simon came through, Simon Mason, and he just went, Rich, look, listen to me. They're not doing you a favour by having you on here. You're meant to be here, all right? They've got you in because they know you can do it. So stop fucking around and fucking do what you do. Because he could see I was nervous, and it was and it changed everything for me.
Yeah.
It made, I went, that's what I wanted to hear. You're supposed to be here. So that's what I was saying to you. You're supposed to be there. You worked hard to get to that point.
Yeah, well... After the blackout failed, I ended up working with, do you know Jason Perry from the band A?
I know Jason. Jason and Adam live around the corner from me.
Shut up. I know him. I spent plenty of time in Lee-on-Sea, Southend-on-Sea.
That's where I'm at right now.
Unbelievable.
Lovely blokes as well.
Yeah, if it wasn't, like Jason came on board with my band The Blackout from our second album The Best in Town, and we went to Texas and recorded with him, and that man there probably he changed my life for the better when he became involved in my band, and he made me realize that I think I was getting a bit too big for my boots. I was getting a bit, because just before The Best in Town came out, we sold out the Astoria in 2008 or 2009, I believe it was.
Great venue that was, yeah.
We were the fourth ever unsigned band to sell it out.
Fucking hell.
Which is, yeah, which was insane. But then, yeah, so I was getting a little bit big for my boots, shall we say. And then I met Jason and he made me realise that, because I loved A, I love Nothing. Nothing's one of my... It's what a song. What an absolute new metal banger.
Great album.
Yeah, fantastic. And Alan Partridge reference as well. So double trouble. So like he came along and he made me realize that I didn't have to be a dick. I could just be lovely to everybody. And yeah, he literally changed my life. And him and Adam. So I ended up working with them. On a project called Hello World that we did a couple of years after the blackout split up.
Yeah.
And we put on two events in Genting Arena in Birmingham over 2 days and had 12,000 people turn up or whatever. And we ended up going to LA to do like research and go to a bunch of like video cons, like the YouTube conventions and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Because we were looking for YouTube talent to be involved in our... festival pretty much. And I ended up outside the Comedy Store in LA, and I was just standing there and I was just amazed by the building because I've seen it so many times and I've seen so many comedians performing it, you know, on YouTube or through the years. And I had to make a story. I made an Instagram story saying, just to check myself, to be like, one day I'm going to perform in this building. And I just remember, just being stood outside and reading all the names outside, and you're like, fuck, this is insane. Like,
yeah.
And one day I hope to have a bash.
I tell you what, when this all calms down and we're allowed back out, we're going to get you a gig. We're going to get you up on stage. We're going to get you doing it. I think you'd be great. Just listening to you, I think you'd be brilliant.
I just don't, it's not the getting up on stages. Like, I see people saying, getting up on stage is the hardest part, and that's easy.
You've done
that. That's literally, it's easy.
But that's it. It is the hardest bit. People have said to me before, I'd really like to give it a go. I'm like, that's the hardest bit, getting up. Once you've gotten up, you do your bit. You might crash and burn. You might get a couple of laughs, but you will know whether you want to do it again. That's the thing. Is after you made that step, because I my first gig 2.5 minutes. It's supposed to be 5. I did 2.5 minutes, but I wanted to do it again. I was like, I need that. I need it. And so
I know. Yeah. I know already that I want to do it again, even if the first one bombs.
This is going to be a project now. We're going to get you up. You're going to
love
it.
I'd love it. Please do it. Force me to, because I need it. I need it. And do you know what? When it happens, then I'll give you the 10% of the first good year I make.
I would just be happy to just see you doing it. I want it.
You say that now. We'll talk about it off here.
When they go, can I have some gigs? They go, no, we don't need you anymore, Rich. We've got Sean doing it.
I literally got in the gig and I'm like, I'd never heard of this, Rich. It's like, we've got your podcast you're on. I wasn't on any, but I recorded that audio myself, talking to myself. I don't know what he's told you. He's full of shit, Rich.
He's fucking mad, that Rich. Says he knows everyone, the idiot.
But like one of my favourite moments ever, bear in mind, right? And this is me showing how much I love comedy, right? This isn't like a fucking brag or anything like that. Like, I've been on stage the middle of the day in Reading on the main stage. We've played to 60 plus thousand people, right? And played these fucking insane gigs and toured with Limp Bizkit. Ended up singing with Limp Bizkit once, right? Fuck. I literally did an impression of Fred Durst at Fred Durst, right? Hey man, wake up and smell the concrete. It's strange to see you change like the ELP. Yeah, I literally did that to the man's face, right? So that's one of my greatest memories. But one of my greatest memories was the Blackout won in 2005. We won Best New Band at this Welsh event called the Pop Factory Awards, right? Yeah. And I went up on stage and I didn't have a speech prepared or anything. And I literally thanked everybody's parents, apart from our guitarists, because his mother was my English teacher. And I said, thanks to everybody else's parents, apart from James's mother, who was my English teacher. And now my fucking words are taking her son around the world, right?
Yeah.
And I came off stage and Rod Gilbert came up to me and said, oh, that was really funny what you did up there. And I was like, And I was just so blown away that Rod Gilbert thought that something I did was funny. And then I said, oh, can I have a photo with you? And it was back before he did that mince pie stuff, before he had the big shows or whatever. I just known him from like doing the circuit. And I asked him for a photo and he was like, what? You want a photo with me? And I was like, yeah. And he couldn't get over it. And I couldn't get over it. He thought I was funny. So it's always been in me that I've needed to be funny. And I've always wanted people to think I'm funny, I guess.
Mate, I'm telling you now, Sean, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. You've got it. You've absolutely got it. And this has been an absolute joy to talk to you. I've really, this has been phenomenal, man.
Thank you.
Honestly, where can we find you?
I'm on Twitter, Instagram, I don't know which one's which. Right, on Twitter, I am unverified because I've got the username at Sean Smith Sucks. That's S-E-A-N Smith Sucks, because I thought if I just do that, it saves trolls time. I thought if I just say I suck now, what can you say? Sean, you suck. On Instagram, I'm unverified because I've got the name at fake Sean Smith, because the real one was taken. And now I cannot get verified whatsoever. Again, I do the podcast, Sappening Podcast, at Sappening Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you very much. And I'm back in a band. I've got a band called Raiders, who literally a week before we went to announce the start of the band, some bastards took the band name on everything. So no. Spotify, Apple, everything. So it's Raiders space UK everywhere to listen to. We have a song that we wrote 2 years ago where the end of it goes, everything is turned to shit. And because I'm so sarcastically miserable, it goes, everything is turned to shit. Fuck yeah. And we put that out at the beginning of the pandemic. And it's almost as if we wrote the song in December this year, but for March last year. So there's a song called Destructobot. by Raiders. So yeah, I do a podcast called Sapmi Podcast, Raiders Band, and I used to be in the Blackout. So if anybody wants to check out what sort of shit that used to be, please do.
Dude, this has been such a wonderful chat.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Insane in the membrane.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.